Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Oh, no, it's more than just the drum loop. I'm here. Just got caught a little short-handed on the intro. But I am. Yahalda. I'm here. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the multimedia madcap zany real-time extravaganza that is Horn Chat. Yes, indeed. Just run over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on Chat Room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be met by none other than Jules, Lady Suki, Steve from Georgistan, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran Chat Room moderator, Sparky, who being a third-stage guild navigator, who also knows the better part of valor, is not folding space, and is not becoming man cave this evening. Of course, another reason he's not becoming man cave is because here in a little bit, he will be moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, in about 57 minutes or so, because it's Friday on the front porch. Yes, glory, hallelujah even. Mm-hmm. That means that we will fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable and get our we will get our conversation on. Okay, I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are as well. I have a feeling this. I enjoy the hell out of our Fridays because it's more free form, more rollicking, and you get more opinion flowing around at the same time. And I love that. I absolutely love that. So if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, I encourage you to do so. You'll find the group warm and welcoming. And, it's easy to do. A, you got to have Skype. And what you do is you fire up Skype. And you send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. It's all one word, Sparky Dunc. And you put a note in there saying something like FOTFP, Friday on the Front Porch, Horn, just something brief, so that Sparky will know you're not that you're a real person and not someone who's going to start emailing him about collecting the fortune that a Nigerian widow has that she was left by her Saudi businessman husband who died tragically of cancer. Okay? Okay. And once you've done that, Sparky will set out the breadcrumb trail for you. And you'll be all set and ready to go. And we'll be doing that, oh, like I said, about 58 minutes, 56 minutes, something like that. All good? All good. So get ready whenever you wish. A reminder, this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. We don't have any ads for Buy Gold Now or, Bose Wave radios or General Steel buildings or Lumber Liquidator floors or Oric vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off beds made of off of Swedish foam, upon which you lie while waiting for your herbal hair regrowth capsules to kick in, or your herbal erection tonic to, too much visual, I know, sorry, to work. None of that. The only thing that makes this network go, and the only thing that has made this network go for pretty much its entire life, is your determination to have this network. Yes. And thanks go out. Thanks go out to Matthew. Because Matthew, yay, became a $10 a month subscriber to The Horn. And I cannot tell you how much we all appreciate that. Our subscribers are so important in filling in the gaps when we have low fundraising days. It's one of these days. One of these days, I still hope to see us reach the level of 100 subscribers. But we're thrilled with the subscribers that we've got even now. And Matthew just became one of them. And in so doing, Matthew got his subscription doubled this month, courtesy of Brother Deacon Gerald, chairman of the Building and Grounds Committee of the Cathedral of the Cathedral of Common Sense. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you very, very, very kindly. And that means that since Brother Deacon Gerald extended that offer last night, that means that there's one more slot remaining open to have your subscription doubled by Brother Deacon Gerald himself, the very one, the one, the only, of the Building and Grounds Committee of the Cathedral of Common Sense. One more slot remains open to have your monthly subscription doubled by Brother Deacon Gerald. And if you become a subscriber, how do you become a subscriber, you ask? Well, it's easy. When you go to headonradionetwork.com and you click on chat room, there are fields to fill out, your name, your address, things like that. Questions about what you do for Mr. Smithers down at the Springfield nuclear plant. Those you can leave blank and just get to the next screen. But on that first screen, there's a box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And if you'll click it, zounds, you will be a monthly subscriber. And you can make it 10, you can make it 20, whatever you want to make it, whatever is comfortable and works for you. Okay? Whatever works for you. And the data, well, we don't sell the data to anybody or anything like that. So that's how that goes. Yeah, okay, contribute, the contribute tab. I thought I said that. Oh, well, I get ahead of myself sometimes. Hey, but that's how that works. And thanks very kindly to our subscribers, James and Grant, and to Paul earlier today. Our fundraising goal is only $390 instead of the $450 it was at the end of the evening last night. So $390 to finish fundraising to the good, to the even, for this week, this first full week of August 2016. $390. One at $390, two at, $195, and I can't go any further from that because I don't have a calculator open, and I don't do those kind of numbers well, just doing the gazintas in my head. But 39 at 10, 10 at 39, and it all happens over at under the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com, unless you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, in which case you mail checks or money orders made payable to The Horn to, see how this works? The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Okay? And if you want to use the mails, just let me know, and I will send a note to Boss Man Wayne so that he can know that he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck and just take the take that nice sturdy piece of zinc galvanized pipe with him when he goes into the UPS store to our mailbox in case he runs into a member of the Klan. You want to have something like a nice sturdy piece of zinc galvanized pipe if you ever do run into a member of the Klan. So we've got that all sorted out, which is great. Well, I am informed that maybe there's some relief coming for the Midwest. Carol Baker just sent me a note. I'm home, honey, and the sun has decided to veer off its crash course for Kansas City. 30 degrees cooler today. 85 degrees seems like parka weather. Damn straight. Exactly. And, happy weekend to you, Carol Baker. I hope it's, I hope you can kind of camp out and hide in the air conditioning for the next 2 days and maybe no cleaning implements will spontaneously combust. Jesus. Yeah. So we've got interesting stuff to talk about this evening. Timeout. Stand by. Oh, and thanks to all the kind words from everybody who saw or who listened either to the podcast or listened live last night when I was filling in for Malloy. I've had word that Mike is feeling much better, so hopefully he'll be behind the mic this afternoon. Mike will be behind the mic. That gets confusing rather quickly, doesn't it? At 9 o'clock this evening, and I'll be keeping my fingers crossed, and I know you will as well. And everybody just wants Mike to start get feeling better because, who wants to be sick in this heat? Who wants to be sick, right? I had an interesting, an interesting email from Edwina a little bit ago. Edwina was listening to the Malloy podcast from last night, and she said, I like your show. I'm a Malloy podcaster. Just writing from Wisconsin to tell you that the Republican Paul Ryan just ran an anti-terror ad for the first time last night, prime time, and again at noon news. By the way, the subject line, last night's show called The Upcoming Misogyny Right. The terrorist pictured in dark shadow in the Ryan ad was a woman with big sunglasses, no hijab or anything indicating a Muslim terrorist. She was clearly a white woman and looked somewhat reminiscent of Jackie Kennedy in sunglasses. Her appearance was very brief, so it was subliminal, and I immediately thought it was prompting the blinded viewers to think of... need some reverb for this. Evil Hillary! Really interesting that I was just listening to my podcast and you mentioned the firestorm of misogyny that we will undergo if Hillary Clinton is elected president. I think this ad shows they're at it already, and you're really in the correct ballpark about the party of Reagan. Sincerely, Edwina. Thank you, Edwina. I loved hearing from you, and I hope we'll hear more from you. Feel free to join the little Horn family community congregation that we've got going here and chime in anytime. Mm-hmm. So we've got that started. Interesting. I also received feedback from corporate communications at Bob Evans, where they treat strangers like friends and friends like family and family like crap, saying no. We're offering everybody relocation. No, we are. Never mind what our letter said. Never mind what Devra Cornell SHMP-PC said. No, really, we are. We're not a big corporate gang of asshats. No, we care. And apparently they also responded similarly to to Scott in San Diego. You know, Punky dictated a note, and Scott took it down and sent it off to Bob Evans because Punky was disgusted. And you don't want to be around a cockatiel who's pissed. You just don't. Scott said, I got a response from someone at Bob Evans regarding my recent email to them regarding their shabby treatment of the Elkview, West Virginia employees. Got a response from a Brianna Betts, guest and consumer relations person for Bob Evans. She writes, we understand the shock our employees felt receiving this mailing and regret our decision to handle it in this manner. While efforts were previously made to contact all employees for relocation, we did experience complications getting a hold of all of our staff at our Elkview location. We are currently working to contact each employee in order to offer a position at another location and support during this difficult time. Again, we appreciate your comments. We value your patronage and appreciate your interest in Bob Evans Farms. Well, damn, doesn't that just seem so humane? We'll just have to follow up and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But look, a little bit of activism, a little bit of pressure, and Bob Evans started folding like a cheap suit. It can work, you know? Yeah, nobody wrote to call them nasty names or anything. Instead, it was more the, I'm not mad, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. And it accomplished a goal. Nice note coming to begin the program from Jennifer up over down under in Australia. She says, Bob, that's me. I tuned in to the Horn, Thorn in the Side, Thursday, precisely while you weren't appreciating very much being asked to read stupid fucking limericks. My heart sank. Oops, I've offended for the 24... No. That had nothing to do with you, Jen. No, Jen. Oh, I hope you're hearing this, Jen. That had nothing to do with you. You didn't offend. No. I was talking about, I was being rather at sixes and sevens as to what to do about this program, because apparently one cannot so much as mention the name of, well, I can't mention the name without making people go absolutely batshit off the rails beside themselves. Henceforward, we will refer to her only as the Devil! And hopefully that'll make people happy. Jennifer says, I surmised you received a dismissive missive from Jay Cruzan sounding off that your show is a three-hour lecture. Maybe his comment is in some small way partially my fault, as my words are lectury. If I fractionally contributed to the acrimony, I apologize. I'll work on my delivery. But not before I have one final say, if you'll permit, because after my phone call, when it was demanded that I stop being so goddamned logical, all caps, things are getting ridiculous. Can I call a summit? Jennifer asks. Jay Cruz, and it cost my entire savings to relocate from the southern to the northern hemisphere for the lion's share of 3 months, but I will do a have a show on me when you call Bob and converse fairly. No one I've encountered reasons more decently. Furthermore, losing friends only adds lunacy to the ridiculousness. Either way, the Horn deserves $200 for Bob enduring my wordy re-entry meltdowns, LOL. No, Jen, that ain't what it's about. I appreciate thoughtful correspondence. I really, really do. So, Jen continues, I claim earning rights to say this about Bernie. People who think it was ever about him didn't listen or listen to themselves instead. I hope this isn't rude, but you sound a bit Chris Hedges on Democracy Now! Inspired and Jill Stein, a person with no political chops, leaning. Now, everybody remember, this is not Bob lecturing anybody. This is Jen trying to share the benefit of her experience and her wisdom. Okay? Just want to make we're clear about that. Sorry. Jill Stein is a paltry substitute for Bernie. He asked us to join him in keeping the work moving to put the tools in place that will leverage the movement to the next stage and the next. It's not here and now or nothing. It's a process. One of the huge differences between him and Stein, Bernie and Stein, is he lives that. Do you think Drumpf has a place in our revolution? A man who isn't fit to eat the crusty smear off Bernie's shoes? Well, there went my dinner. Crusty smear. Crusty smear. I'm saving that one. Ye crusty smear! I mean, there's not a dirty word in there, but if the, whoever you call it doesn't swing back, they're not listening. Ye crusty smear! Drumpf is not fit to eat the crusty smear off Bernie's shoes. A bug who will restrict rights, destroy a tenuous free press, establish figurative and actual gulags, all while inciting global rage and fear? Well, see, but that's not fair, Jen, because trying to get people to vote out of fear. And apparently that's a problem. Even if... There are times when fear is a normal and a rational response. It exists in the human panoply of emotions because sometimes it will save your ass. You know, it's the motivating part of fight, of the flight end of fight or flight. Yeah? Like it or not, the devil does have a place in the EVOLUTION evolution, even if it is only to be merely endured. Why? Because she won. It is what it is. How else do I know she has her place? Because Bernie said so. If we panic, we forfeit everything he accomplished. I don't know much, but I know lamenting about not getting the Oval Office won't get the Oval. Losing friends won't either. It is what it is. That is what I was saying when I was hung up on. If we're lucky, not by me, when she was talking to someone else who hung up on her for being so damned logical. If we're lucky, the devil will stop the bug from fucking us into oblivion. The thing about tomato bugs is they proliferate into armies. Oh, ain't that the truth? I've seen it happen. I make sense of the world through gardening. The devil and Trump. Do I want either? No. Do I want snake beans and tomatillos? Yes. Do I want to pour a bucket of semi-toxic homebrew pesticide on my plants? No. But it does break down and the soil quickly normalizes. If I don't bring out the buckets of the devil, the tomato bugs destroy everything. You ever tried to kill a tomato bug? It's almost impossible. Trump can't be drowned. He floats belly up and flits off only to reswarm. He can't be stomped on because he's armor-plated, and even if you bury him in the ground, he slithers upwards and pops back up. One needs a bucket of semi-toxic brew and to cut off the damaged area. Then hold your nose, pour, and back off for a few days. When you return, there's growth, still living plants capable of a harvest, but only after you figure out how not to repeat the mistake and how it managed to get so bad without you noticing it until it was almost too late. Jennifer continues, I tried to be a purist when I established my garden. Even brought in a backloader of organic base soil. Ha! I'll skip to the failure highlights. The black Tuscan kale, which you'd think is indestructible with a leathery toughness, was devastated by whitefly, mealy bugs, and aphids. A frickin' bug dance party on and under every leaf. Then there were after parties when the bugs dispersed across the entire patch, while into the fray joined the assault from underground, invasive strangling piano wire-like couch grass, pronounced cooch, oh, I'm sorry, cooch grass. So why the fuck isn't it spelled K-O-O-C-H? That's Jen, not me. Kind of like why is Koch Brothers not pronounced cockheads? Oh, you're working the pro circuit now, Jen. Proliferated because once its roots are present, they never go away. Who is the organic gardener in my analogy? Jen asks. I still apply many of the principles of organic gardening. I companion plant, compost, currently experimenting with Bokashi brand. My worm farms are spectacular. I use a seaweed-based fertilizer. But I recognize I do not have an organic garden. That's a pipe dream in a poisoned world. There is no true organic gardening unless everybody around you also gardens organically. Otherwise, it's an illusion. You're still gardening in a poisoned world, and your oasis is smack dab in the middle of it. I imagine that's how a progressive Democrat feels in Appalachia most days. Oddly enough, yes. Hey, that's me. So, would I prefer to live in an entirely organic ecosystem? Check. It is what it is? Yes, it is. Check. Do we trust the devil? Yeah, wait, that meme is stale. We've so often trusted only to be surprised and disappointed. Carter, so trustworthy until, oops, surprised and disappointed. Bill, lather, rinse, and repeat. Obama, wow, those first few months, remember the heady, intoxicating illusion of feeling as though we had arrived at Arcadia? Even those of us who knew it was an illusion drank of the power of the moment. Then we started to notice, hey, wait, he's not honeymooning with us. He's in love with the Repiglicons. Oops! Surprised and disappointed. This is true. The devil really is the most vetted candidate in history. We know straight out of the gate exactly what we must fight to prevent. That's actually an advantage we won't have with Trump. I suppose we have it with Pence insofar as we know what a filthy, bigoted, misogynist racist does as a representative and a governor, but imagine that in the Oval with the blank check from Eddie M. and Yertle. It is long past due, Jen continues, for us to stop bloody carrying on like injured innocents. To state the obvious, Trump is dangerous. Simple words with deep repercussions. If you disregard them for their simplicity, that is. He's a clear and present danger and even a potential global menace. Crooked the devil should be countered with Dangerous Donald. But the Dangerous Don is our creation and our responsibility. This didn't happen overnight. The couch grass roots have been underground for ages. While we've ignored their presence, we the peeps need to accept that our addiction to stuff and fun has been a destructive distraction, while the roots of demagoguery and true fascism have been sucking up the nutrients from the rotting dung of our apathy. Bernie knows of which he speaks. How could you have listened to him for so long, only to refuse when it is critical? We will have our day. Look how close we just came. Is it asking too much to be joyous and to capitalize on the advancement it represents? That leads me to what is considered politically gauche. Note, these are not the words of Bob Kincaid. Let's reiterate that. These are not the, because she put it in all caps, these are not the words of Bob Kincaid. I solemnly encourage you to vote for the devil like your life depends on it. There, I crossed the line. I'll even go so far as to say you'll thank me one day. I know this to be true with the same certainty that I now know how to kill a tomato bug. Stomping can get the job done if you, yes, first bury it, and then stomp and stomp and grind your foot left and right over and over until the fucking thing dies twice. Like I said, I love considered correspondence. And Jen considers a lot. And I hope I don't get any emails about lecturing. Because that really did kind of piss me off. But we'll get over it because it's Friday on the front porch and we can and we're going to have a damn good time, right? Hey, right. What do we got? I'm presuming that not yet. So does that work for you? Just instead of saying her name, we'll just use the devil. Because after all, she's the devil, isn't she? Mm-hmm. And that hopefully will tamp things down. Hey, wow. Long time no heard from. Just had a notification from Kate on the Front Range out in Montana. Kate has jumped in to become a subscriber, a monthly subscriber. Yes. And along the way has been met by Gerald's doubling offer. And in the process has taken us down to $365 to go for fundraising this evening. Thanks, Kate. It is so good to hear from you. I can't wait till you maybe feel up to, a full missive. Because it's been a long time since we heard from you. Hope you're feeling well. Hope you're healing well. It was Kate long ago who said, "Listen, bub, you got to get better at this fundraising thing, or you're not going to be on the air very long." And so I'm still not very good at it, but Kate provided on many occasions a gentle reminder, someday we'll turn on the computer and the mic won't be hot. And we experienced that once a few months ago and it sucked. But hopefully it won't happen again. And the way we keep it from happening again is finishing every week okay, and there's $365 it takes to do that this week. Oh, happy birthday, Heather. Happy birthday. See, you thought I forgot, but I didn't. Oh, and this coming from Carol. Those who don't like the lecturing format of your show can always start their own. Good luck with that. Okay, the pushback begins. Billable Rick says, Hillary isn't the devil. Don't use that term. Let's not dignify T-Rump's comment about Hillary by using that appellation. Also, we don't want to let the Repubs frame the debate. Oh, I'm not trying to let the Repubs do anything. I don't give a goddamn what they call her, Rick. I'm calling her the devil. Because one of the, purists or whatever can explain to me, isn't she? Don't you see it on Facebook and stuff like that? I saw one earlier today that said, it was a picture of Anne Frank that said, Anne Frank, instead of protesting the Holocaust, Anne Frank should have joined the Nazi Party and worked to change it from the inside, making a direct analog one-to-one comparison between the Democratic Party and the Nazis. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not the same as Heinrich Himmler. And it goes without saying that the little murderous psychopath with the Charlie Chaplin mustache is not the same as Hillary Clinton. I mean, just saying. I guess for some people they need her to be, but she's not. But if one of the real true Hillary haters can explain to me that she's not the devil, then that begs the question, what is she? I mean, apart from being the nominee of the Democratic Party, and yes, there were a lot of problems with the nominating process, and yes, the Democratic Party is just up to its eyeballs in sleaze and filth, and hey, son of a bitch, I just woke up. Are we talking about politics in America? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But all things being equal, I really am sick of the this political race sucking all the oxygen out of the room, because there really are a lot of stories that deserve attention that will mostly just be, you know, blown past. Yeah. I mean, I guess they're opening the Rio Olympics tonight. Maybe there'll be some pushback, but, you know, who cares? I mean, I worry about the people who will probably be sickened trying to swim in the filthy water, or, you know, what have you. But beyond that, I mean, Michael Phelps, the record-breaking medal-winning swimmer, said recently he didn't think he had ever competed in a clean competition in his life. What does that say? But they're going to open whatever tonight. And I don't know if you noticed this or not. They've had some problems. They've had some problems with the Olympics. And this is not from The Onion. Oh, okay. Marty clarifying a little something for us. There are no swimming events in the polluted water. Those are reserved for the sailing people. Well, of course they are. Because, you know, people who, well... But this story came from Yahoo Sports. It's not from The Onion. It's not a joke. Although the headline is about as onion as a headline can get. Our buddy Ron in the oh-so-comfortable North sent this to me a couple of days ago. Headline, Rio officials lose keys to Olympic Stadium. Let me read that again. Rio officials lose keys to Olympic Stadium. And I guess that's where the opening ceremonies will be held. And Hopefully somebody's bought the new T-shirts for the Australian team who got their T-shirts stolen the other night. And the mayor of Rio de Janeiro's offered to give them, put a kangaroo in their portion of the Olympic Village to make them feel more at home. You know, what?
What? Vic.
But no, this story is real. The problems Rio organizers have run into before the opening ceremony have ranged from disturbing to outrageous. Now they're just funny, writes Daniel Tran. According to media reports, Rio officials lost the keys to Olympic Stadium on Wednesday, August the 3rd. This left organizers unable to access the mixed area of the venue. No big deal, right? Desperate times call for desperate measures as workers had to come in and use bolt cutters to get into the stadium. In a city with more than 6 million people, a locksmith was apparently too difficult to find. The way these games have gone, the Olympics has looked more like a mismanaged college party than prestigious international competition. One of the most exciting things of these games may not be whether Michael Phelps can get more medals or Usain Bolt sprinting off into the sunset of winter, but whether the Olympic flame can actually make it into the stadium to finish the opening ceremony. And I guess, is that still an open question? Because some protesters, disgusted with the amount of money that the Olympic, the Brazilian government had spent on those godforsaken games, as the Olympic torch tried to make its way toward the stadium, came out with buckets of water to try to throw on it. And when you consider the degree to which the needs of the poor and the struggling and the huddled masses of the favelas of Rio de Janeiro have been thoroughly ignored when they weren't being outright abused, you can kind of understand the sentiment, can't you? Michael Tran finishes by saying, unlike a lot of Olympic years, fans may consciously have to root for simple events like finding keys in order for these games to be successful. Yeah. So, you know, there's that. Something else along the way? Well, the workers are still trying to finish a number of sites there for the Olympics in Rio, not the least of which is the actual Olympic Village, which, you know, caught fire. This has put tremendous pressure on the working class who are actually building the Olympic venues. Construction on these venues began in January of 2013. More than 3.5 years later, they're still not done. And since January 2013, remember this, as everybody's walking around the track in their various multi-colored track suits and whatnot and what have you, waving to the crowds and waving their respective national ensigns. Take a moment to remember at least 11 people who will not see anything of those games, but who gave their lives for them. Cynthia Lopez is a public prosecutor in the labor courts of Rio de Janeiro. She said it's a shocking number of deaths, those 11. The Brazilian construction industry has a bad record when it comes to health and safety, but when you have a fixed deadline to deliver projects, as is the case with the Olympics, things get even worse. And this comes after 8 people died trying to prepare for the 2014 World Cup in Rio. or in Brazil generally, there were 12 different venues in 12 different cities. 2012 Olympics in London had no work construction deaths. There were six who died during prep for the 2008 Beijing Games. Robson Lete was superintendent at the Ministry of Labor in Rio up until this past May. Interviewed by Think Progress, he said, "These are deaths that could have easily been avoided. The preparation for the Olympics has been a scandal when it comes to the health and safety of workers." The maximum 10-hour workday stipulated by Brazilian law has routinely been violated. Safety equipment necessary to the completion of the project was nowhere to be found. And at least 600 workers were hired, you know, under the table. Hercules Terra, an auditor for the Ministry of Labor, said these employees have no official papers and are overworked. They're pulling 23-hour shifts. This greatly increases the risk of accidents. This situation is a ticking time bomb. Out of 260 inspections and audits between January 2013 and March of 2016, conducted by the Ministry of Labor, there were 1,675 infractions, 38 temporary suspensions on construction were issued. The infractions, well, how about insufficient training for workers, lack of basic safety equipment, see above, excessive working hours, noted, insufficient downtime between shifts. Well, it's kind of hard to have sufficient downtime when you're pulling 23 hours. And yes, no drinking water at all for workers. Yeah. Kind of takes some of the pomp and ceremony out of the whole Olympic experience, doesn't it? Kind of sounds like the working people are being treated like maybe the Spartans would have treated the Helots if they were hosting the games. Of course, they weren't, because they were always hosted at Olympia or Mount Olympus or whatever in ancient Greece. But I mean, what's a few workers? Human beings are cheap. There's always another one willing to step up to do the work of the last one who died, because, as Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago taught, workers don't matter, are easily replaced, and are the most ready and available commodity in the entire economic labor structure. So kill them if you got them, because capitalism. Mr. Leta, Robson Leta, said construction companies think of fines as an expense, because they tend to, they're small, and the companies just pay them, and then they keep doing what they were doing in the first place. You know, we've got a phrase for that in English in the United States. We call it cost of doing business. Meanwhile, apparently they believe in small government in Brazil, because one of the reasons that 11 people have been killed trying to build everything necessary for this exercise in futility and non-necessity is because the people who inspect job sites, well, They lack both cars and the necessary employees to do the inspections. Here in the new United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, amen. We call that self-regulation. Yeah, where industry can always be trusted to do the best thing by both workers and consumers, and will keep an eye on themselves, because otherwise the free market will say, bad, bad, spanky, spank. Yeah. So the auditors could only do one inspection a day. Pardon me while I don't get worked up about the Olympics. I mean, for God's sakes, these workers have been treated like draft animals. And that is a simile. A metaphor is when you say that something is something else. If the word like appears, you know it's a simile. These working people have been treated like draft animals. And while it is simile, it is not hyperbole. Let's run right quick to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, shall we? Now, when I was a little bitty redneck boy, growing up in the Shoals area of Northwest Alabama, we had what were referred to at the time as Mennonites living in communities up north of Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. And I've come to understand, you know, Amish, you know, the horses, the buggies, the long skirts and the plain fasteners and bonnets on the women, and the men in their plain clothing and their long unkempt beards. And every once in a while, every couple of months or so, we would go about 45 miles north up to Lawrenceburg and get a big bucket of sorghum molasses from the Mennonites. And my mom and dad always said that there was nothing like them. Just delicious. I was never a big sorghums fan, but my God, they loved them. On a big hot biscuit about as big as a cat's head. It's just hot and steaming in the middle with the not hard as a rock butter on either half, and then just swimming in sorghums. Whew! Oh, look, 6:53, food porn. But they'd pick up some fried pies for me because I liked them. But yet you'd see them on the road. The Tennessee highway officials went the extra mile. Hi, see what I did there? And made, you know, the horse and buggy lanes where possible so that they could go clip-clopping to wherever it was they needed to go, because they wouldn't use a car because the devil! No, not that devil. Different devil. The one with the horns and the tail and the Dionysus. Right. Religion. And it was all kind of quaint. The not quite so quaint side got exposed up in Lancaster County, PA, where Marvin Sensenig, you be careful among those English, where Marvin Sensenig 20 years old, of Lancaster County, was hauling a farm wagon full of watermelons, as well as himself and one other fully grown adult male, and was using one poor, pitiful horse to do it. Now, I just did a story about 11 workers dying in 3 years in Brazil, and it probably occasioned a little bit of outrage, but there's a horse involved with this, so get the Kleenex out, because you'll probably cry. Court documents state, and I quote, Sensenig used one horse to pull a farm wagon with a burden too great for a single horse. The horse became overheated due to the hot temperatures and collapsed onto the asphalt. This here is horse-killing weather. You better hitch up old Dobbin to the shay in a two-team if you want to carry those watermelons there, Martin. Marvin. No, the accent's not working, is it? He sounds like he's from fucking New Hampshire. But he did. Marvin Sensenig, age 20, didn't have an elder there, I guess, in the community to tell him he was going to need more than one horse to haul that wagon load of watermelons and two big old Amish men to market. No, I mean, they weren't selling the Amish men at market. And the horse collapsed in the traces. At which point, Marvin Sensenig got off the wagon and began to kick the horse in its guts and in the back of the head, and then got down and bent over and started punching the horse in the head. Do I remember correctly that the Amish won't, I mean, they've got like permanent conscientious objector status in the overall panoply of America's war-making machine? Because their God forbids them to, you know, go out and kill. Because they take that thou shalt not kill thing in back in Genesis or where the hell ever so very seriously. I guess horses being dumb animals don't count. Now, I'm not a member of PETA, okay? I'm not, but this pisses me off. It doesn't piss me off as much as 11 dead Brazilian workers. But it pisses me off. Among other reasons, because he very nearly got away with it. People had to raise hell with the authorities in Lancaster County, PA, to get them to finally file charges against Marvin Sensenig. Yeah. Because the officials in Lancaster County, PA, weren't quite sure if they could really and for truly bring animal cruelty charges against the Amish. No kidding. Tawn Crowther watched Marvin Sensenig beat this horse into collapse, and she posted it on Facebook. Today, my friend Mimi and I watched, and she took pictures. There he is, dark pants, blue shirt, suspenders, straw hat. Today, my friend Mimi and I watched as an Amish criminal beat a horse to the point it collapsed. The horse was unable to pull a wagon full of watermelons and two grown men, so the Amish man walked beside the horse and beat it until it fell to the ground. At that point, he continued to kick, hit, and pull on the poor, seemingly dying animal. I pulled over and called the police. They came to evaluate the situation, only to tell me they're unsure of the outcome because Amish are governed under a different law. Ton Crowther wrote, "Are you kidding? Isn't abuse standard across the board? So if I decide to beat and kill animals, I need to change my religion to be above the law? Are you telling me the police are powerless against the Amish?" Just an update. The police officer has reached out to me and is trying to help. Somebody tell the GOP. Somebody tell the Republican Party. Somebody tell all those weird freaks all hung up on Sharia law that we might have a problem, Houston. Because apparently there are some out there who think that you get a break because of the religious laws of the Amish. I wonder if that's Amish Sharia law. But tremendous public pressure had to be brought to bear for this 20-year-old punk in a straw hat to be brought to something resembling justice. Penn Live finally interviewed the district attorney of Lancaster County, Craig Stedman, and he said, "You simply cannot treat animals this way. And if you do, we will hold you accountable." A petition was circulated, 13,000 people signed it, looking for something resembling justice for the poor horse. Well now, how about that? Carol tells me, around here, the Amish are known for their brutal treatment of horses. Years ago, when I had a horse, I was encouraged to take him to the Amish to break him. A good friend warned me off, telling me of their brutality. I ended up sending him to a Native American who literally talked to the horse, brought him to me, saddled him up, and got on. End of training. Seriously, I watched it. Spare the fist and spoil the hoss. And I'm sure that if they beat the living daylights out of their horses, it's because their God told them to take dominion over the animals. Because it's right there in the Bible. Jeebus. So, yeah. Treating humans like animals. And, animals. Sadly. Like humans. Oh, and a note from Kate on the Front Range. Subject line, re-entry. Hola, long-time listener, long-time debater, and contentious fill-in-the-blank. Thanks to Brother Deacon Gerald's offer to double my pledge. My injury in October, fractured femur, cost $94,000. Rehab cost $8,000 a month. And I'm homebound since flying home from Washington to Montana in December. Took two seats. Needless to say, I'm sort of tapped out. Not enjoying hearing folks fight and argue over shit that don't matter today, considering the changing climate and disease outbreaks. Some stuff just don't matter to me these days. But I do go on. Computer's a mess. Can't type without pain in my arthritic hands and my fading memory. However, an hour once in a while is humorous. Sorry for the typos, bad grammar and spelling, and disjointed thoughts. None of which were there, Kate. Come on. Thanks to all the listeners who are working so hard to keep the mic hot. Thank you, Kate. Thank you so much. So good to hear from you. And what a harrowing experience. You are much in our thoughts, and have been. Note coming from David in South Carolina, Stan. In South Carolina, one of the valid reasons for not having a government-issued photo ID for voting is if having such a photo taken is against one's religion. Mm-hmm. Religion. So, $365 to go in fundraising for the evening, and let's take a break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, capably moderated for oh so many years by our buddy Sparky. If you'd like to join in, just send a contact request. The Bob signal is lighted. And if you need, because for some reason Skype doesn't work for you, if you need the traditional telephony, the group can hear you and you can hear the group on the stress line, named for gone but not forgotten, the irrepressible Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Let's get this going, because like I said, I look forward to it. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Friday on the front porch. Come on up. Put your feet up on the rail. Grab a glass of sweet iced tea or a glass of lemonade or half and half. Or pull the corn cob out of that crockery jug over there and take a pull. Might burn a mic going down, but you'll be feeling better real quick. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid. You saw this coming, didn't you?
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sand and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot.
is a desert with its life underground and the perfect disguise above. Under the cities lies a heart made of ground, but the humans will give no love. You see, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain.
Sing it.
In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain. La, 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 la.
Understood that song to be more a warning about the dangers of the abuse of psychedelic drugs, than anything else. I mean, I'd let the horse run free too, because otherwise it's going to drown once the desert turns to sea. But you know, who the hell am I? This is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. It's 11 minutes past the hour. And we've got a good group forming up over in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. And let's go straightway over there and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm great. It's a lot cooler today. I think it was 89 the last time I checked. It was supposed to be only get up to 92.
Well, hell, you'll have to get out the blankets tonight.
Great Northern California desert has cooled off, but fire season has picked up here. Had a couple fires, one down by Sacramento, one over by Chico the other day.
Good God. Because everything's just bone dry, right?
Yeah, that's why it's really...
I mean, that's
really
pretty much normal summer.
Yeah. But last I looked, there was still a little bit of snow on Mount Shasta. Not on Lassen anymore.
So, yeah, it sounded from Carol's notes like Kansas City had become the anvil of the sun itself.
Yeah, well, I've been there, but not with the humidity that they probably have.
She didn't mention the humidity. I think the temperatures by themselves sort of made worrying about the humidity superfluous.
Mm-hmm. But anytime you talk humidity with me, I always remember the time I spent in Thailand and Guam for humidity.
Yeah, that was just like walking around in a sponge, right?
Yeah. You walk from your barracks cubicle that we had to the end of the hall to take a shower, get out of the shower, walk back to your barracks cubicle. It was about, 25 feet away from the shower, and you were sweating again like a pig.
And meanwhile, Tim from L.A. in the chat room with the traditional response, "What's snow, Sparky? Tell me about this snow."
Well, there was a lot built up on Mount Shasta, and if it stays up.
Well, you kind of need it to be a 365 in order to, right? And it used to be that way with Lassen, too, right?
It used to be. There used to be a glacier on Lassen, but it's gone. I mean, it took many eons to build that glacier up, and then in a couple hot summers in the drought, it just disappeared.
Yeah, that's more of that non global warming at work.
Yeah, but Mount Shasta, as long as it puts out water, I'm fine, because I get my drinking water from the spring that comes right out of the base of Mount Shasta, where the water company bottles it. It's so much better than our well water here. To drink, anyway.
Is the well water kind of funky?
Yeah, it has a kind of a funky, and it's loaded with minerals in it, or stuff, because it'll corrode stuff pretty easily, too. I mean, over time. You know, it leaves like a calcium deposit or something.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. It's scaling. Mm-hmm. Well, Carol tells me, she said, I had 100 men on roofs yesterday. They all survived. They're my heroes. I can't. I remember many, many, many years ago spending a summer doing roofing work in Alabama. And it was one of those things that sent me screaming back to college because I knew I did not want to do that for a living.
We rebuilt a school one time, and we spent the mornings up on the roofs and in the attics doing our work. And then the afternoons we'd be underneath the floors where it was nice and cool. Because it's the school was built in 1937 or something.
Yeah.
And it had a real, you know, like not a basement, but an underfloor, which was pretty, you know, 3 to 4 feet tall in some places. And the whole school was built up on a raised footing.
Well, we've got it. We've got a good gang in the chat room this evening. We've got Billable Rick and Snork and Scott in San Diego and Punky. And Steve from Georgia, Stan and Jules are all here. Who wants to jump in?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Rick.
It's Billable. What's yeah. Up? So the devil, huh? That's what the burn bots are calling Hillary?
No. I'm doing it. No,
you're doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go. No, you got to do it right. The devil.
There you go.
D-E-B-B-I-L, Rick. The devil.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just trying to get with the program. That's all.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. We got to get the lingo right. Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there's killery, shillery, hitlery, shrillery, and I just get lost among them all. So I figured I'd just cut to the chase because it seemed like the overall impression is that she is. Wait. Evil incarnate.
There you go. Will the reverb appear in the podcast, or will it be heard in the
yes,
podcast?
Yes, the reverb is in the podcast.
Ah, okay. I gotcha. Okay, well, I guess I'll talk about how it seems like every day Donald seems to be giving us a new gift with his idiocy, and he's just sinking himself deeper and deeper in the hole. I mean, if a guy would have a hard time trying to lose any harder than he is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's down by 2 points now in Georgia.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And look, I don't know how to explain this, Rick. I didn't support her in the primaries.
I don't,
they're not the made up baloney crap that the right wing has been flinging at the walls for 25 years and yeah. Not the email malarkey that was an outgrowth of Benghazi.
Right.
But the real live, honest to God, bad judgment stuff gives me a case of the turtle squirts. Okay. It scares me. And it makes me understand that from a progressive activism standpoint, either one of these two, whoever gets elected, we'd better have our goddamn marching shoes on, because pressure is going to have to be applied to try to keep them from doing something incredibly stupid.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, at least Hillary thinks it through before taking the action. Donald just does it, like, you know, on the spur of the moment.
Well, asking three times, why can't we use the nukes? We got the nukes. Why can't we use the nukes? I mean, we've got these beautiful nukes.
They're huge.
And I've gotten to the point where I hold my little dick finger up in the air whenever I talk like that because, you know, it just happens to you.
Oh,
but the monster? The monster is, oh, and again, that's not to say, you know, I saw something last night, you know, I don't think it's fair to, like, mock us just because some of us know, have done the work and know how awful she is. Well, shit, I know how awful she is, okay? But there's only two choices.
The devil you know and the devil you don't, right?
Well, or maybe the, in this case, the devil we know and the devil we know.
There you go. Yeah.
But which devil?
Yeah.
You know, and for the, and you know, for the burn, and I'm not talking about Bernie, but, you know, for the burn baby burn crowd who just wants it to all go away, you know, yeah, you know, we'll have a better world after the revolution, after everything's been destroyed. My immediate thought was of Rome with, because, you know, I always think about things in these terms and it's kind of, you know, but I am who I am. I was thinking about Rome with Attila the Hun at the gates.
Right.
And, you know, inside the gates of Rome, there really weren't any Romans going, well, I say we open the door, man. You know, because we're going to have a much better Rome after Rome is burnt to the, you know, ground and everybody gets like all raped and pillaged and killed and shit. And then,
yeah,
you know, then we can have like the Republic back, dude.
Yeah, right.
Nobody was doing that because they understood what the very real threat of the barbarian hordes camped outside the city walls was.
Yeah, right. And I guess Trump and his camp is an analog to the barbarians and the hordes outside of the city walls.
Well, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
There's something about my internal makeup that I'm not willing to run the risk of screwing over people who absolutely live on the tiny little pittance they get from things like Social Security, or screwing over people who are finally, for the first time, maybe ever, are finally able to go to the damn doctor when they're sick so that they can keep on working to support this goddamn capitalist wonderland, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
Oh, I'm lecturing again. Damn it.
No, that's okay. I mean, another thing to keep in mind is the Supreme Court. I mean, if God forbid T. Rump gets into office, I mean, if he elects, you know, like Heritage Foundation selected Supreme Court justices, which he said he would do, then we're going to be, you know, we're going to have like another 30 years of, of another crappy, you know, Supreme Court, you know, like we had under, starting in 1970 when
Berger.
You know, Berger. We got rat fucked by Berger. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually less sold on the Supreme Court as an argument. I mean, I know that's the big one, and everybody keeps pointing to it. But as even 9-0 majorities have shown us, the court, generally speaking, throughout its the history of this country, the court is better at getting shit wrong than getting things right.
Yeah, I mean, to
remember that dumbass sweet Granny McCluckey case, keep coming back to it. A 9-0 opinion saying that a woman going for, you know, a pap smear has to have sweet Granny McCluckey and her bizarre dead chicken in one hand, rosary in the other, Catholicism, sticking signs with it. Ah, look at the little fetus. Look at the dead fetus. Hey, pro-life interface. She can't just walk peaceably into Planned Parenthood because sweet Granny McCluckey's weirdo, bizarre, sick, twisted religious rites are more constitutionally to be valued than a woman's simple right to be unmolested. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG, by Jesus, she signed right off on that, didn't she, Rick?
Yeah, she did.
And the
she
wise did. Latina?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sonia Sotomayor, signed right off. And Elena Kagan, signed right off.
Yeah. Well, it's religion, Bob. It's religious freedom. Right?
I think we need a constitutional amendment that says that the court will always have at least one atheist on it.
Oh, there you go. That's a good idea. Well, I'm sure the atheists will be all for that, but they only comprise, what, 10% of the public? 15%?
Well, I mean, technically, if you want to look at it from, you know, strictly a technical standpoint, and you're not looking at it from anything other, that is true. I mean, they have the right to protest, and I mean, even though I don't agree with it, I fucking don't agree with it, because I am a big Planned Parenthood supporter, and I have had to deal with those protesters helping people get in and out of clinics before. I do not agree that they should be able to be there. I think that they should have to be like 5,000 feet away from these clinics, but technically they have a right to protest.
Well, no, but Jules, that's not necessarily so, because the First Amendment is not absolute and untrammeled. Reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions are a longstanding part of the First Amendment. But the fact of the matter is, because this involved a religious question, the religious mania on the Supreme Court, said kind of meh. But yeah, they've got a right, but they do not have, you know, your rights end where my nose begins.
Also, the numbers are much higher. The non-religious are somewhere between 30 and 35 or 40%. It's difficult to measure.
Yeah.
But it's definitely closer to 20 and growing every year.
Oh, and hey, just to interject real quick, good news. Thanks to Colin out in Illinois. Well, out to me. Colin in Illinois. The fundraising goal just dropped to only $330 for the rest of the night. So hopefully we can knock that down in an hour and 34 minutes. So there's hope. By the way, Sparky, I just had a note from Clarence. Subject line, Thailand. Tell Sparky I was a security policeman at Utapao Airfield, Thailand. I guarded the B-52s and KC-135s in that heat and humidity. I know what you felt.
Yeah, and he was out in it too, like me.
Yep. Interesting story coming out of Thailand. The Thai government, which, of course, is sort of a military dictatorship right now, authoritarian nightmare, have decided that they're going to crack down on the sex trade. And make the tourism minister or whatever making a statement saying, you know, people come to Thailand because of the wonderfulness of our country and our culture and our people, and we can do very nicely without prostitution. Thank you very much. But it's not going over real well, because the police are involved in prostitution, the bar owners are involved in prostitution, and of course, at the bottom of the earning scale, of course, the prostitutes are involved in prostitution, be they male or female.
Well, there's several resorts there. That's basically one of their prime industries.
Yeah. Snork just noted in the written chat, how are they going to get ministers to visit Thailand without the sex trade? How are they ever going to get the Baptists to come back? Amen. So there's that.
Not to mention Rush Limbaugh, Bob.
No, that's Dominican Republic, Rick.
Well, I know, but he probably does sex tourism wherever he can, you know.
Well, whenever he wakes up from nodding on the OxyContin, yeah.
There you go.
Hey, I see that Charlie has joined us from Tennistan. Good evening, Charlie.
Good evening, Bob. What's going on?
Oh, we're just kind of kicking back and having a good old time.
Yeah, I was listening to Jules, and, you know, I have never heard a progressive outright advocate abortion. I have never heard that. I've heard of people who believe in freedom of choice, but I have never heard of anybody actually going around and advocating abortion.
Oh, just ask a Republican, Charlie. All us progressive people are out here. I mean, you know, we have dried babies sprinkled on our post toasties every morning. In fact, some of us just have fetus flakes for breakfast.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, I've always heard all these right wingers and all, and when you look at the facts, there's nobody that goes around advocating abortion. I have never heard of that. It just doesn't exist.
No, there's generally not a lot of people who do. I mean, I'm pretty vociferous about saying that that abortion can be a good thing. It can be a great thing when it saves a young woman from a miserable remainder of her a miserable future, or in fact saves a child from having to grow up in the bone crushing poverty so thoroughly favored by the GOP.
And you know, I don't know. You know, it boggles my mind to hear these right wingers and, you know, how, and some of the things that they say, and it's just not true. It's not factual.
Hey, here's one from a couple of years ago that you all might remember.
Hey, Scott. Hey, Punky.
Hi, hello, Bob. Hello, group. There's old Punky. There was a right wing group several years ago. And this, to me, is the epitome. This is the apex of using the abortion, the pro-choice position, in a inauthentic way. I mean, the way that they frame these things is just bullshit from the word go. What they were proposing is that the shortfall in Social Security funding was directly tied to the expansion of abortion in America, simply because X million number of babies, because of abortion, did not get born so that they could grow up and go into the workforce and fund things like Social Security. That they actually ran that up the flagpole. And you know, a lot of the righties just jumped right on it and said, "Yeah, yeah, what they said." Can you imagine that? The audacity that it would take, but they don't deal in any functional reality that any of us would recognize. It's not enough to simply be against something, and to give valid reasons why they're against it. They've got to pull this nonsense straight out of their ass. To put out in public to further confuse the issue. Do you remember that, Bob?
Oh, I do. Scott, they fling so much poo at the walls. It's hard to remember which ones stick and which ones just slide smellily to the baseboards. I remember hearing, you know, "We've had a holocaust of abortion in America since 1973, and who knows, one of them babies might have cured cancer."
Well, and the thing is, all of these anti-choice people, to a person, if you were to give them an opportunity to adopt an unwanted child...
If
it was a crack baby or a person of color baby... they would just turn their head and walk away. I mean, these people, and I think it was a George Carlin line from a few years ago, these people would step over a drunk lying in the sidewalk in a puddle of his own piss on their way to a Right to Life rally. That's how insensitive and whacked up these people are.
Exactly.
They love their country, but they can't stand about 90% of the people in their country. And Punky gives a hearty amen.
I heard it.
As I've said before, you know, I worked for Planned Parenthood for a while, and you would be absolutely astounded and heartbroken if you heard some of the reasons why women make the decision to have abortions. My heart has gone out to many, many women in these positions. It's very tough. It is a very difficult decision to make in many cases. And they each have their individual reasons and causes and whatnot. And I mean, to have someone ask you what they can do about it because they don't have the money or they don't have the access, and saying stuff like, "Well, I know you know how to do it. What do you do?" or I know you know what I can take, what can I take, or where do I get it, is just, it's heart-wrenching.
I mean, you know, our dear friend Beth in Dallas devoted her life to taking care of women in need, and has from time to time shared stories about you know what it was like, and the persecution and the torment and the stalking and the lying and the abuse that was that everyone there was subjected to by the right to life religion industry, and it is an industry.
It is. It really is. And then you have, you know, you have these young girls come in. They've gone to one of these clinics, one of these hope clinics, you know, that only distribute literature for, you know, the gold right way. And you can adopt and you can do this and you can do that. And they don't get any other information. And they're like, I know there's other alternatives. What can I do? And, you know, they're scared to death. They don't know what to do because they don't want to tell their parents. They don't want to, you know, they are afraid of what's going to happen when they tell a boyfriend. And they're half scared they're going to get beaten from someone. And, you know, you want to protect them, but there's only so much you can do. And, I mean, legally, there's only so much you can do. And then our position, at the time, there, you know, we had lots of resources and we were able to do, quite a bit, but there was limited follow up that we were able to do because of what our resources were. So, I mean, it just, it's a beautiful job to be in, but at times it could be really, heartbreaking. And I know there were a lot of women that would come back and, you know, be very thankful of the what help they were able to get from our organization. So that was really cool too.
Well, it's a damn shame that every progressive idea, like, you know, the idea that women control their own bodies, has to be fought for, you know, every inch of the way.
Yeah, and we have these fucking damn fools like Tyson and these other bastards that want to fucking close Planned Parenthood across the way, and then they say, okay, well, we have alternatives. We have alternatives to this. And you know what kind of alternatives they give? They give Salvation Army. Salvation Army doesn't have a clinic to take care of women. They have places to go get clothes. They have shelters. But no, not places for breast exams and gynecological exams and pregnancy tests and counseling centers. They don't have that kind of stuff. But no, that's going to be the equivalent. Bull fucking shit. No, that's not the same thing. So, but that's all I'm, yeah, I'll be quiet now.
The Olympics opening ceremony is underway.
Now, I was under the impression that NBC was not going to send it live.
I thought it was going to be. I could go on to the other computer and check. But I just saw a tweet from Obama I put in the chat room. Tonight, the first ever team refugees will stand before the world and prove that you can succeed no matter where you're from. And also, did you know that the U.S. Olympic basketball teams are staying on a cruise ship?
Really? No, I didn't.
I read that today on USA.
Just trying to avoid the Zika or
I don't
or the
know.
Kangaroos, or I don't know.
I don't know, but it's the men and women's basketball team. They got more restaurants on the ship, and they got their own private pool on the ship, you know. And
they're trying to avoid the Olympic hovels. I mean, village.
Oh yeah.
Hopefully they don't get cruise ship disease.
Just the basketball team, though. Hmm. Most of the others are, I guess, in the Olympic Village.
That's only like 10 or 12 guys on the basketball team. They have a whole cruise ship to themselves, huh? Wow.
No, the girls are on there, too.
Oh, okay. The basketball team's got you, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if the ship dumps the sewage into the water they're swimming in, then everybody's going to get the cruise ship two-step, which is called norovirus.
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah,
I had kind of a lighthearted thought about the Olympics proceedings down in Rio. I with all the run up on the NBC TV stations counting down to the start of this thing, going back at least a year, they've been counting it down because we've got an NBC owned and operated TV station here in San Diego, but. With all the hoopla and you know, just people going gaga over the Olympics in Rio, I'm thinking that Rio, really nothing that they do in Rio for the opening ceremonies is going to impress me, because I saw the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, and if you remember that, the Olympic flame was displayed in something that looked for all the world like a gigantic French fries container from McDonald's. I know it's visual, but if you Google 1996 Atlanta Olympics flame, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. It was the one that Muhammad Ali lit up at the start of the proceedings. It looks just like a French fry container from Mickey D's.
Well, meanwhile, back here closer to home, I guess they're getting ready for a big Trump clavern in Green Bay. And a reporter by the name of Jesse Opoien, O-P-O-I-E-N, who can be followed on Twitter at Jesse, J-E-S-S-I-E-O-P-I-E, has been live tweeting it along the way as the crowd waits for their chance to see white America's savior. Couple of goobers. Come on. There's lots of goobers. One guy shows up from Appleton, Wisconsin. A fellow by the name of Stephen Biggins, wearing a T-shirt. Jesus died for you. Trump lives for you. And he told he told Jesse, and I'm sorry about the last name. I just got no idea. He told Jesse. Wait a minute. The devil is, this is a quote, responsible for satanizing America. And he gets a vote. And then there was the other good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, who was holding a sign that sent hand lettered and everything. I'm checking. Yeah, he spelled everything right. Miracles do happen. And all it says is, I wish Hillary had married OJ.
Good God.
Okay, Bob. Self-help.
Oh, jeez.
What, Jules?
Self-help. That's the only reason he spelled it correctly. Self-help.
Oh, well, possibly, maybe he was copying it off of something at that website that rhymes with light and fart or red state or any of those other bizarre places.
Well, you know, OJ does go for blondes, though, so that much would be accurate, Bob.
Oh, Jesus, Rick. if you just drill down into that, this guy wishes that someone had slashed Hillary Clinton's throat.
Well, given
that, I mean, isn't that fucking chilling?
That is chilling. I mean, he should get a service. He should get a visit from the Secret Service for that sign.
Hey. Was this also in Wisconsin?
This is like today now in Wisconsin.
Well, you see, there's not so much goobers in Wisconsin as there are, you know, when you're talking about intellectual capacity, some of these people wouldn't measure up to the intellectual capacity of a Wisconsin cheese curd. Never mind goobers.
Hey, take it easy on the cheese curds here. But no.
Bob has a secret longing for cheese curds. So yeah, you've got to take it easy on those cheese curds now.
And well, let's remember Wisconsin is the great state at one point that gave us progressivism, but it later gave us Joseph McCarthy. So do the math.
Well, yeah.
It gave us Scott Walker. Scott Walker. Fortunately, he wasn't inflicted on the U.S. public.
Amen to that. Boy, is that good. We did not.
And Sheriff Clark, Sheriff Clarkey, was mentioned on this program a few Fridays back, and he's there. He's on the speaking list.
Speaking of Wisconsin, according to the current number from electoral-vote.com, the map, it's all color-coded, Wisconsin is pale blue. Their 10 electoral votes are leaning, at this point, likely Democratic. It's Clinton 43%, Trump 37%, and Johnson of the Libertarian Party 8%. So that's going to be one of the swing states, I'm sure, in this election year.
You know, I have a feeling that the Donald is not going to appeal to Wisconsinites to a large extent, just because of the upper Midwest sensibilities of the voters. You know, he also won't appeal to voters in Minnesota for that same reason. You know, people are generally very polite, and he's been dropping a whole lot of F-bombs and S-bombs at his rallies, in case you've, you know, listened to, you know, like clips that aren't on the, you know, mainstream media and so forth. And even CNN is letting some swear words go now, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's that same mindset as they talk about Iowa Nice, how some of the Republican candidates during the early primary days wouldn't do well up there, because I'm thinking of Chris Christie as one of them, because of his abrasive manner, and certainly Trump.
Right, right.
But even Iowa, according to this map, is leaning, barely GOP, with Clinton at 39, Trump at 40, and Gary Johnson at 5. So the people are, you know, there's a feeling running through the populace of discontent, disgust and discontent, where they want to stay with reality-based reality, okay, in terms of their options, but they don't want, you know, somebody that is so far off into the extreme that it negates any good thing that they may have to say about something.
Or let's just put it this way, he threatens the safety of the planet, the survival of the species, if he's going to start using nuclear weapons, you know?
I mean, well, there is that.
I mean, a guy who has to wonder why you can't use nuclear weapons, I mean, what is he stuck at? The maturity level of a 10-year-old or something like that? You know, I mean, give me a break. You know, that's scary.
Somebody
should ask him if he knows what the football and the biscuit are.
Steve from Georgia Stan here. Speaking of that, Morning Joe stated that Trump asked 3 times about nuclear weapons, and that was, I believe, Wednesday, and that scares the hell out of me. I don't know how y'all feel about that. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have seen the 1964 film Dr. Strangelove more than a few times. And I think of General Jack D. Ripper. And if you've seen the film, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
The guy who called up the nuclear strike, okay, overriding the president and everybody else. If Trump, in a stump speech, utters the phrase, precious bodily fluids, I'm getting the hell out of here. I don't know where the fuck I'll go, but I don't want to be anywhere near where the fallout or where ground zero is going to occur.
But well, allegedly, Ron in the Great White North, I suppose, Scott, right?
Allegedly, this was in one of those press conferences that he is now privy to, being he is a contender, and he asked three times.
You mean security briefings?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That he is now privy to, and so is Hillary. And he doesn't have a clue. And he inquired three times, you know, about nuclear weapons.
And for safety's sake, somebody with a cool head needs to give to Trump totally dummied up intelligence stuff. Because no, I think Harry Reid suggested that they do that.
In all seriousness, yes, Harry Reid did that. He's like, we ought to get him like cartoon versions.
I guess sort of a Colin Powell showed the United Nations as a basis to, you know, to attack Iraq, basically, right? With the cartoon versions of the, you know, the mobile.
The trailer.
Yeah, the trailer, you know.
Yeah, and the little thing on anthrax. Yeah, I remember that. But, yeah, that's just chilling beyond belief. And that's the same day Bob was playing, you know, the metal Pat Boone, and he was saying to me,
"Take me down to the Paradise City."
Oh God!
And I was saying, Bob, we need the levity. There's some really heavy shit going on here. You know,
no kidding.
Yeah.
I prefer Axl Rose's version to Pat Boone's, just for the record.
Well, who cut? But it was funny, and it did take my mind off of everything that was down. You know, that's not funny. You start talking nukes, the whole shit house is going to go up in flames, man.
Yeah, there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah, on one point, there are several checkpoints before, you know, the nukes would go off. I mean, he wouldn't be the final. I mean, there would be, you know, checkpoints prior to them going off. And the other point is that the security briefings that Hillary and Trump are getting are modified versions of what they would actually get if they got into office. So they're not like getting secure. They're getting secure information, but it's not the security information they would get if they were in office too. So,
well, here's my question. Why is Trump even getting security briefings? Because he's claimed several times to know more about the situation than the generals.
Well, I mean, the origins of the security briefing is something that was started by Harry Truman. Because when Harry Truman became president, he was outraged at the degree to which the Roosevelt administration had completely kept him in the dark. He absolutely knew nothing about the Manhattan Project, and so consequently had to sort of guess at the right answer in terms of whether or not to use the atomic bomb. And so beginning with Eisenhower, the briefings began, and it's become, I guess, traditional ever since then.
We may need to back off of that, though, especially when we got these knuckleheads that are that close.
Well, I mean, I think this is sort of a sui generis type of election in terms of, you know, who would have guessed that you'd have had somebody that was even dumber and more ignorant than George W. Bush as the, you know, standard bearer for a major party like Trump is this year, you know? I mean, he's making George W. Bush look downright, you know, like a freaking genius.
He didn't even know what the trinity of the launches was. You know, you have by land, by sea, or by air. He didn't even know what that was, you know.
I knew that, and I'm not even, you know,
me too. Rubio called him out on that in the debate.
Yeah, well, he actually called him out in a very nice way, actually. He could have, like, really wailed on him. But, I mean, it's, you know, just the idea of using nuclear weapons. I mean, why can't you use them? Okay, look at frickin' pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Look at the film of the testing that was done at the Trinity Point in New Mexico, you know, during the Manhattan Project. I mean, what else do you need to know? That's why you don't use nuclear weapons. I mean, duh.
Oh, exactly. You don't even think about it. I mean, it's not even something that should be crossing his fucking mind. But, I mean, there are some safeguards in place, at least. I'm not saying that they may be the best, but there are a few safeguards in place. But it wouldn't be like he has a finger that is directly on a button, you know. So.
And I suppose if...
Can I say something?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I went through many nuclear alerts when I was in Guam under Richard Nixon. Now, that was scary enough for me. I hate to think of the guys that are manning all the submarines, the bombers, and the missiles. If they have an alert, they never know if it's for real or not until they get the codes. But that would be just scary than shit with Trump.
Well, the thing about Trump is, I mean, you know, with at least Nixon only talked to the portraits hanging on the, you know, White House walls, you know, Trump is actually going to imagine that he's seen a film of a first strike by Russia against the U.S. and that will justify his use of the nuclear weapons against Russia, even though the film never occurred.
Well, it doesn't even have to be that elaborate. He could wake up, having a shitty day. And decides that he doesn't like something that somebody said or something that he thought somebody said. The guy, he's got a hair trigger and could go off the twig at any moment. I mean, that's
you know,
how...
he backtracked on that Iran deal with the money drop.
Yeah, he did. He did about the film was just stock film footage of, like, I guess hostages being flown to Geneva or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there is a 1959 movie called On the Beach that has no violence in it whatsoever, but it discusses this topic, and it will chill you to the bone. And I heard
it was the aftermath. I was watching it when I was a kid. No, it was the aftermath of the nuclear war, and this one submarine was in Australia.
Correct.
And they went back.
That movie will chill you to the bone, and there's not any violence in it whatsoever. And I recommend anybody that's in my earshot to watch that.
And they were just waiting for the radiation to come kill them.
Yes.
In Australia.
Yeah, that might make a little light viewing for Friday night. No. But I've seen it. It deserves a rewatch. It really does.
Well, and another good one is, I think it was also in 1964, along with Dr. Strangelove, the movie Failsafe with Henry Fonda down in the bunker underneath the White House with... Larry Hagman was his translator, and apparently somebody had set something off, and
the B-58 Hustlers from Alaska took off. Does anybody remember what a B-58 is?
You talk about a chilling scenario. Watch that. If you can get that movie Failsafe, watch that. Because it's just... You know, and for Trump to think in contrariness to the general forward motion that we've made in cutting back on nuclear armaments, he thinks that it's a perfectly viable option, you know, to launch some of these things. as if nothing else is going to happen out of that, you know? Like his actions would not have larger consequences. It's just astounding when you consider the guy is madder than Moses.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
Can we listen to some heavy metal Papoon?
No. I'm fresh out. I'm afraid.
You're not mad at me for finding that, are you, Bob?
Oh, no. You'd be surprised the number of comments I've gotten about in a metal mood. And you guys didn't get the visuals with, you know, Pat Boone and the leather vest and the, you know, the borrowed gear from Judas Priest and all of that stuff. Hey, it is right at 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and I have some good news to report. Thank you very kindly to Tomas. Thanks to Tomas, the fundraising goal is now down to $320 to finish the week okay and even. So I think we're making significant progress, and hopefully we'll get the, you know, the one at 320 or the two at 160 or the four at 80 or the eight at 40 or the 16 at 20 or the 32 at 10 or the 64 at 5. But, you know, if we do the 64 at 5, I'll be spending the rest of the night just reading the thank yous. But thank you, Tomas. Thank you very, very kindly.
I think Cletus found $20 bones out in the yard, so they expect that.
Aw, little Cletus, he's a sweet thing, little Cletus is. Oh, Jojo, what a baby.
But she wants to hear some Papu. No, she doesn't. Nobody does.
No, don't bullshit me, Steve. She runs under the bed when I play Pat Boone.
Oh, she howls, man. She howls.
And remember, you got very close. Did I just hear Cletus? We got very close to having to hear Pat Boone. Well, we heard the first few strains, the opening strains of Pat Boone singing Running Bear from 1962.
And he also covers Stairway to Heaven on that album. That's sacrilege. It is.
Van Halen's Panama is on that album. Panama! Panama!
It's too bad there's no cause of action for, you know, Led Zeppelin and those rock bands against Pat Boone.
Nah, they got paid. You know, it's all ASCAP. It's all BMI.
It's all about the money, isn't it, Bob?
Damn straight.
Well,
on our Cletus is just the cutest little pop. Just the cutest little thing. Look at that. A little brown face, little nose, little white paws. What a cutie. Just adorable.
Here's my question about Pat Boone. Did he ever have an original hit? Because I know he ripped off Fats Domino and Little Richard early in his career. And then in the 90s, he's ripping off heavy metal artists. Did he ever have a song that was his own?
I don't think so, sir. I think he just, like you said, he just ripped off, you know, that's all he did was rip off other artists. Now,
didn't Spark, he have a TV show?
Yeah.
I had a joke the other day to know how old I was. Jay North, the original Dennis the Menace from the TV show in the 50s, turned 65. That's how old I'll be in October.
So look at the original cast of Leave It to Beaver if you want to feel really old. I mean, good God, they're decrepit.
Why the hell is everybody getting so old, huh?
It happens.
Yeah.
Like my grandfather said, I don't mind getting old and dying. He said, I just want to stick around and see what happened next.
So, speaking of what's going to happen next, do you all think that there's any chance that the Trumpanzee is going to leave the race? I don't see that happening.
No, that's not. No, no, no.
I mean, I think he's the best thing for the devil that is possible because, the guy's like, you know, he's about as good at running campaigns as Hitler was about running military.
8:04 p.m. Who had 8? Damn it, Gerald!
Oh, geez.
Well, as far as what happens next, I'm looking out beyond the election, and I've got two things for you in terms of a fearless forecast. I have to wonder, I know a lot of people think that Trump has a chance. I'm thinking that in terms of electoral votes, he will do better than Mondale did with 13 in 1984 against Reagan, but he won't do as well as Bob Dole did against Bill Clinton in 96 with 159 electoral votes. I'm predicting a blowout on Hillary's behalf. And then the question becomes, and we kind of asked this question 50-some years ago in the wake of Barry Goldwater's glowing disaster in 64, will the Republican Party survive Donald Trump?
I think you're overly optimistic, Scott. Put the pipe down, brother.
Well, it's not the pipe that's talking. I was thinking about this a couple of weeks ago when I first came up with this fearless forecast. And I think when it comes right down to the short rows, that in November, people are going to have better sense than to let that tiny handed megalomaniac anywhere near the levers of power. Maybe it'll be a squeaker in Hillary's favor, but no matter how it plays out, I just cannot fathom Trump winning. And like you say, I may be in la-la land, but I just cannot see it. I would like to think that America has better sense.
Well, I think there's a decent chance that Hillary will win by, it's not going to be LBJ proportions, but it's possible that it could be, you know, kind of like Clinton against Dole, maybe, you know, something like that.
Well, that's what I was saying. I mean,
yeah.
He'll obviously do better than Mondale did in 84, okay, because that was the ultimate blowout when it was Reagan-Mondale. But Bob Dole, God bless him, I mean, he's a true believer and a patriot from his World War II service. And compared to today's crop of Republicans, he was a fucking moderate, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a very decent guy. I mean, that's the sense I have about him. I didn't vote against him. I voted for, who did I vote for in 96? Maybe I voted Green in 96 because I couldn't handle the campaign finance scandal of Clinton, you know. So I was disgusted by that, the Chinese money and so forth. And, you know, so I voted, I think, Green that year. That's the only time I haven't voted either Democratic or Republican. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm surprised that he even is willing to show his face at those Republican conventions, you know.
Well, call me a Pollyanna, but I'm hoping he'll get blowed out worse than any candidate has ever been blowed out before, just to send him a message and to send society a message that, you know, we're smarter than this.
Hey, Steve, since you're down in Georgia, Stan, do you think Hillary's going to take Georgia?
What do you think, Bob? They say
no punting. No punting. No punting. You got that. That one was directed to you.
honestly, no. Karen and I were riding around within a 6-mile radius all day today, and all we seen was Trump signs on the back of cars. So you take that for what it's worth.
I saw my first Trump bumper sticker today.
And if you were to have a Hillary sign on the back of your car, you would probably go into the mall and come out, and your tires would be slashed. That's how bad people are in the tank around here.
Did you make it? What if it said Hillary, she devil, 2016? What would happen then?
I've got a question about the Trump sign on the car. Did you happen to make note of what kind of car it was?
It was actually a red pickup truck, diesel. And the guy that was driving it had a head bigger than a basketball. And it was blowing out black smoke, and I looked at Karen.
Oh, he was rolling coal.
Yeah, and I looked at Karen, and I said, well, there's your Trump supporter, Karen. And I'm not casting dispersions. I'm not the most handsome guy around. It's just, it is what it is. I'm just telling you what it was, you know.
Well, see, I kind of envisioned the typical Trump supporter's car not being that of very recent vintage and not in very good repair. That's just my prejudice, I guess.
No, it was a nice pickup truck. I mean, it was probably within the last 2 years vintage, you know.
Was it foreign or domestic?
It was definitely foreign. It was definitely I retract that. It was definitely domestic.
Well, there you go. But maybe I'm full of it. It wouldn't be the first time someone would accuse me of it, up to and including me.
Well, the one I saw today was during a yard sale. My neighbor had a yard sale this morning. There was cars all over the neighborhood. And I was out there directing traffic because it was garbage day. And we were afraid there were parked right in front of the garbage can. We ended up moving all the garbage cans down the street. And I was looking at every car. So this old pickup went by with an older guy driving it, and he had a Trump sticker on the back. Beat up pickup with a Trump sticker. But other than that, I haven't seen too many around here. I seen a State of Jefferson sticker the other day.
All right, Bob, I'm passing the ball to you. What are you seeing as far as stickers around West Virginia, Stan?
What I see more than anything else are homemade, you know, where some hillbilly has taken the trouble to make a homemade Trump sign and stick it in the yard. Because they believe. I mean, I've seen a few stickers here and there on cars, but hell, we've still got rusted out. Rusted out Chevy Cavaliers running around with McCain Palin stickers on them. Oh, and anyone interested in knowing that Green Bay Trump rally this evening. One of the hottest selling T-shirts is a T-shirt with a drawing of Trump riding a hog, you know, a motorcycle, and he's the back of his shirt says, "If you can read this, the bitch fell off." And also on the picture, and is the motorcycle is going toward the White House, and the bitch is of course the devil.
Yes, how quaint.
And she's falling off. She's falling off the bike, where of course she will receive a grievous head injury or be killed. They cannot resist. They cannot resist the homicidal urge when they think about Hillary Clinton. And the shame of it is that we got people on our side doing the same thing. I mean, I mentioned the Bart Cop Pat Boone popcorn photo. I've been looking for it. I can't find it. I was going to post it in the chat room. It's gross. One of the things that I was reminded of, and maybe for the sake of perspective, this is worth remembering. Bart Cop, who was the granddaddy of the liberal internet, okay? He was there when nothing else was. And he started precisely because he was sick to death. I mean, remember, Bart Cop's page began as a page on one of those, you know, internet... Remember back AOL and what was the one that Sears sold? But it started out as Rush Limbaugh, lying Nazi whore.
Was it Prodigy?
Might have been.
Or CompuServe?
I can't remember, but it was one of those. Rush Limbaugh, lying Nazi whore. And it morphed into BartCop.com. And the biggest part of it was a full-throated, fuck you defense of Bill Clinton. And the war being waged at that time against anyone deemed to be liberal. Okay? So, flash forward in time to 2008. Bart Kopp was rock solid in Hillary Clinton's camp. And I remember that time because the debate raged fast and furious. Bart Kopp was under the impression, I mean, he had the notion that if we nominated Barack Obama, he would just get trounced because this nation is that racist. But here's something interesting. While during the primary process of 2008, Bart Kopp was absolutely rock solid in his defense of Hillary Clinton and his advance of her as the best potential nominee of the Democratic Party, he said one thing. He said, when these primaries are over, I will support the nominee. And when Barack Obama became the nominee, he became an absolutely dedicated supporter of Barack Obama going forward. And during Barack Obama's presidency, Bart Kopp never slacked off in defending him. And among other things, when Tiger Woods, whom he referred to by his first name, Eldrick, when Tiger Woods said something shitty about Barack Obama, Bart Kopp dropped the Bart Kopp hex on him. And every so often you'd see a picture of Tiger Woods on the page with the words, hex on thee, hex on thee, hex on thee. And you know what? I mean, I'm sure it's just coincidence, but Tiger Woods' career went straight to shit. And when the nominating process was over, you never heard Bart Kopp say, "Oh fuck it, I'm going to vote for Nader," or "I'm voting for Jill Stein." He recognized that it was more important that we keep, you know, Bobber John McCain and later on Bishop Willard Romney out of the White House. And that was Bart Kopp.
That's interesting.
But, you know, here we sit in 2016, and we can't do that. Maybe it's a sign that there's a little bit more heft, that there are more people out there who are espousing progressive ideas, that there are enough who will say, "I can't stand her. God, she's the devil. Never Hillary." And if this comes across as a lecture, so be it. But there are times we have been better than this.
Yeah, I mean,
And make no mistake, if Bart Kopp was not dead, if Bart Kopp had not been taken well in advance of his time, you know, he's born in 1953, he's 10 years older than me. He wouldn't be out there posting comparisons between Hillary Clinton and fucking Hitler, you know, since we've already passed the marker, 8:04 p.m. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there as a consideration.
Another thing that people have to keep in mind, Bob, is, you know, the last time that the Democrats decided to, you know, not support the nominee, the Schraub got elected. You know, the Supreme Court gave him the office 5-4. So we don't really have the luxury of you know, ideological, you know, party purity here. We have to just go with the person who is better than the totally crazy, insane, you know, narcissistic sociopath, Trumpanzee, Mar-a-Lago, Mussolini, Donald.
Don't forget Demented Circus Peanut.
There you go. The Orange Menace.
Orange Tomato Bug.
The Orange Tomato Bug, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, good news. Good news, good news, good news. This is big. I wanted to let you know that Thanks to Charlene, the fundraising goal went down to $245, and thanks to Steve, Karen, and Cletus, you're a good girl. We're down to $225, and courtesy of Ralph's, a $25 challenge. Ralph's will double the next $25 that come in, which will get us below $200 for the evening, and it kind of offers hope for getting to getting out of the week in the clear. So thank you very kindly, Ralph's. Thank you, Charlene. And thank you, Steve and Karen and Cletus. Let's see, a couple of more things, a couple of notes that have come in along the way. Mark in Florida says, Nixon wanted to nuke the dam north of Hanoi. You know, the dam, D-A-M, not the D-A-M-N. He wanted a new, Operation Duck Hook, 1 million casualties expected. Evangelist Billy Graham in complete compliance. Propaganda leak, soften up the audience for acceptance. Softening remarks a la 11-year-old to Pence. Huh? There we go. And that was real. Up over, down under. The War Game. Robert writes, this is not the Matthew Broderick film in War Games. Made in 1965 by BBC, the docudrama The War Game was not shown on the BBC until the 1990s. It was banned. It is such an horrific representation of a nuclear attack on the UK and its aftermath that the heads of the BBC didn't want to be responsible for pensioners throwing themselves under buses after seeing it. And that is an actual quote from the BBC. And it's just been released on Blu-ray. It's well worth seeing if you can find a copy, says Robert. Thank you, Robert. Wow, what the hell was that? Going back to the American basketball team on a cruise ship, Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, says, how appropriate, cruise ship accommodations for athletes participating in an Olympics in Brazil. The goddamn thing. Who's doing that? That ain't me. The goddamn thing.
Not me, I'm muted.
Okay. The goddamn things, these ships should be outlawed. They're unseaworthy, hazards to navigation, cesspools of disease, manned by third world underpaid crews, and under command of their white Norwegian et al. Captains and officers. These garbage scows shouldn't be allowed to operate without properly trained and paid personnel. Tourism for the bloody mob. But who am I kidding? And the same goes for the current face of the games in Rio. Why are the Olympics being held in a vast, sprawling metropolis of extreme poverty, disease, filth, misery, and rampant crime? Couldn't the money be spent for other better things, perhaps alleviating the suffering of populations the size of small cities who make their living in the world's largest trash dumps? Don't they need medical care or a tent to sleep in? Maybe a cruise ship buffet? Clean fucking drinking water? How disconnected we are from the horror and evil of this terrible system we live in and support with our wallets, our interests, our continuous fretting and bemoaning. Be sure to stare into the ridiculous circus of your 10-foot television. Be sure to wax prolific on the fastest human or the longest jump or the tightest volleyball ass. Fuck the Olympics. Criminal and a source of great shame for the entire human race. Regards, Steve in China. And to that, I say, amen. Clarence, meanwhile, says, security briefings, I heard those briefings are limited in scope. The administration has the last word in what is released to the candidates.
Yeah, that was the comment that I was making, is that they're very limited. So, I agree. So, I definitely agree with that. I even mentioned on my show this morning, about the fact that the Brazil government was already in trouble with money, and why were they doing this? They're going to be in trouble, even more trouble, because the Olympics really doesn't bring in, I mean, it brings in some money, but it doesn't bring in a lot considering how much they have to put out, and they're having to pay out a ton with the security forces because they already had problems with bandits and stuff the problems prior to, and now they had problems with security forces because they weren't paying them, and they had security forces fighting their police. You know, I mean, it was just ridiculous. And this was just a few weeks ago. because, you know, of lack of faith. So, I mean, they have all sorts of problems going on top of trying to get ready for the Olympics. And even with the prior to when they held the world open for the soccer, they have all of these stadiums now that are going to waste. And, you know, they got shorted in the end. So they ended up not making a lot of money, if any, money off of that, too. So, and they're already suffering deep poverty. So it's just a mess around, no matter how you look at it.
Hi, it's Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
How are you?
We're good, thanks. How about you? How's life in Fitzwalker, Stan?
Hey, Jenny.
Well, our voter ID, some parts of it got struck down, so that's good, but other than that.
How was the Trump rally? I'm sure you attended it, right, Jenny?
No. I was actually in Green Bay last weekend, but no.
Okay.
I didn't even know they were in Green Bay until Bob just mentioned it a little bit ago. But I was going to say, like, something about the Olympics. I was working masonry. I was in construction in, like, the 90s, or not the 90s, the 2000s. And right after they started building all that those structures in Beijing, wood prices went up, steel price, like, the whole prices, everything went up. And then, I don't know, maybe, like, 4 years ago, I'm not saying I know everything or whatever, but I'm like, it all kind of correlated between the Olympics. So just think of, like, not only the drain on, like, the country that the Olympics are held in, that it drains a whole worldwide economy to build these stadiums to, you know, it drives up prices for everybody. Because if you have, you know, all of a sudden I need, you know, 200 billion tons of steel, which I have no idea if that's even the right number. That means the steel I need to do an angle iron to put a, you know, over a window so I can run brick above it is going to make my price rise up. It's just so people can run around a track or something. It drives me mental.
But Jenny, that's part of a larger problem, isn't it? Look at any city in the United States where, you know, let's say the owner of the Akron Asshats, to which the
or
city...
Or the Milwaukee Bucks, which they're doing right to us right now.
Yeah, and of course, the city loves their team, and yay team, and go team. But they hold the city hostage. Make the people of the city pay for my stadium, my arena, my basketball court, or we'll leave. The jackass who owns the Oklahoma Thunder, is that what they are? NBA
yes.
franchise?
Yes.
Screwed the people of Seattle to the wall, and Seattle didn't capitulate, so he moved the team to Seattle, from Seattle to Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma City Thunder, yeah. And, you know, I pity everybody who plays for the team having to leave a nice place like Seattle and go and live in Oklahoma City. Blech. And he was such a jerk. He sat people down to an invitation dinner, like, you know, other money or whatever. And he fed them bull testicles to show that he could make them do whatever the hell he wanted them to do.
Oh, Jesus Christ! That's horrible.
And that is why the only team I ever follow or go to are the Green Bay Packers, which is the only basically sort of semi-sort of socialist team in America. NFL, no other team can be publicly owned, and that is why I love the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got the NFL created a Packers rule to make sure that no other cities decided to get uppity and you know, have public ownership of their team. You'd think, and you know, but the NFL gets everything wrong.
Well, the Raiders didn't get their wishes. Las Vegas is kind of backing out now, I think.
God, I can't imagine wanting to play in Vegas. I can't. But then again, the NFL's gonna. No, that's not gonna be a problem. An NFL franchise in Vegas. Oh, hell no. But football.
They were going to give them a waiver if they could get the stadium built.
But football is returning to L.A., is that right?
Yeah, but they're playing in the Coliseum for the first couple of years. So the new stadium's built in
new stadium's being built on the back of the people, I'm sure.
No,
and
it's actually not.
You can't afford to go to a game.
The tickets are outrageously priced. I agree, Jenny. But no, to answer the question, it's being totally financed by that owner of the Rams. The city is not spending a penny on that. I think the only thing they're doing
is it in Carson?
Concessions, huh?
Is it in Carson?
Yeah, it's where the Hollywood Park racetrack used to be, the horse racetrack, I think.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so, you know, because Hollywood Park closed down a few years ago. It's just sitting there vacant. So I think the only thing the city may be doing is giving them some land concessions, but that's it. They're on their own as far as building it. I don't know about property tax concessions. I surely hope they're not giving them any. but you never know the way, government officials can be corrupted by, you know, by money, let's just say.
Yeah, and the Chargers is still trying to work out something with City of San Diego, I think.
Yeah, and what the Chargers are going to do if they can't work something out with the City of San Diego is they're going to share that stadium with the Rams.
Well, the Raiders were offered a deal where they could share Levi Stadium in Santa Clara with the 49ers, and they went, because of all the red seats and shit.
Yeah.
And by the way, Marty points out that the new stadium for L.A. You're of course right, Rick. Built where the old Hollywood Park racetrack and the fabulous Forum in Inglewood were, and Marty notes right in the approach path of LAX. Oh, that's inspiring.
I'm more upset with the universities that seem to...
Well, if you've ever flown into LAX, there's a lot of shit in the approach path to LAX.
Oh, and...
the old days of LaGuardia in New York City.
The lowly Falcons are building a billion-dollar stadium with a retractable roof. And they're a horrible football
team.
Well,
damn, the Georgia Dome's not that old.
I know, Bob, and it's a beautiful facility. I've been there. I don't understand why they're doing it. Nobody does.
You need the luxury boxes. That's the key. That's where you make the money.
Well, they're already selling them. They've been selling them for the last 2 years on the TV before, the stadium's even opened yet.
Well, they're in the process of building it right now, right?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
the one in Minnesota opens this season. A new one.
You know, I'm not going to be happy until the Vikings play in the snow again. If it's good enough for Green Bay, it should be good enough for the Vikings.
No,
they're not going to play in the snow, but the new Minnesota Stadium lets in a lot of natural light to make it look like it's sunlight.
So I've been to Lambeau a couple of times. I've been to like some preseason games where everybody's wearing shorts and t-shirts, and it's all bench seating. There aren't any seats. Everybody sits in a bench unless you're in the skyboxes. So in the summer, like, you have a lot of room, but when winter comes around, you're, like, packed in sits like sardines because everybody's got, like, 3 inches of clothes on.
Well, but that's good for community warmth, right?
It is. It is. And you, like, walk into Lambeau. Has anybody been to Lambeau? Like, I'm not a huge football player. I'm not a huge football fan or a player, but it's like you kind of tear up at Lambeau. Like it's pretty serious there.
It's like a football cathedral, right?
It is. It's you gotta.
It's the next stop after. It's the next stop after going to the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Soldiers Field is a lot like that too. I think in terms of
it is. Yes, it is. It's a. Well, the LA Coliseum is the same.
There you go.
Right? These are old, the days of this was built. It was the Coliseum,
right?
Bob, I have just one thing, a correction from a little earlier. There are people swimming in the bay.
Oh, so the swimmers do get to swim in the filth?
The people that do the triathlon?
Yeah.
Right.
The swimming portion of it is in the bay.
Yeah, it is.
I wonder.
So there are swimmers.
Not to open their mouths.
I wonder.
Yeah, don't put your head underwater and don't open your mouth. Those are their instructions.
Seriously. It's kind of hard to swim without putting your head in the water, you know?
Nope.
Wow.
Well, what you do is you put a Ziploc bag over your head and you just swim really, really fast on one good gulp of air.
And you need to have an oxygen tank on your back as well if you've got a Ziploc bag over your head, Bob.
They've posted signs in various languages at the natural water venue, letting the swimmers and the people know that those things floating in the water are not Baby Ruths. I thought that was a nice touch. I wanted to, earlier somebody was talking about the BBC film, The War Game. I found a link that I posted in the Skype chat room where you can apparently watch it. I haven't seen it, but that's what I found, so I posted it.
Also, for swimming in that water, you're supposed to Vaseline seal any open orifice. Or any orifice.
Nice.
Well, knowing the scientific community that does the research on these swimsuits and wetsuits and so forth, I would imagine they are sealed up pretty tight.
Well, after, you know, at one point in time, I kind of toyed with the idea at some point in my life of visiting Rio, but after hearing about how rancid and putrid the water is, the swimming areas are, I don't think I want to go to Rio.
Well, you know, considering that humanity uses our oceans for one giant cesspit, there's really not a lot of beaches that, you know, where you can just sit there and not and be surprised, you know, when a syringe comes washing up on the beach.
Or a dirty diaper or something like that, right?
Or any diaper. I mean, really, when you get right down to it. Hey, good news. Good news. Thanks to Mighty Mouse and Charlie, both of whom responded to Ralph's challenge. That means we got $150 to go fundraising for the evening, which is huge that we've made that much progress. Now we're in striking distance. You know, 1 at 150, 2 at 75, et cetera, 10 at 15, 15 at 10. We might be able to do this in the next 23 minutes. $150 to go. And one other thing. I guess he's not listening this evening, but our buddy, a member of the fraternity of Steve in New York, brother Usher Steve, will be saddened to know that David Huddleston, the guy who played the Big Lebowski, has died. A long and happy life that lasted 85 years. He died of complications resulting from heart and kidney disease. But he became well known and had sort of a second career as a result of what he did in that 1998 film that has, of course, attained cult status.
He was also in Blazing Saddles.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. He was one of the Johnsons, wasn't he?
I thought he was the one that was on the stage when the one of the townspeople. I forget who his title.
Well, now I got to find out.
Hey, you had nothing else to do this weekend.
Oh, we can find out next.
Okay. IMDb does wonders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't he one who? Yeah, he's the one who yells, "The sheriff's near." and offers the Laurel and Hardy handshake. Oh, and by the way, in case anybody was worried, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini used his trip to Green Bay to officially endorse Paul Ryan in his primary race against that other lunatic teabagger.
Well,
according to IMDb, in the movie Blazing Saddles, David Huddleston played the character Olson Johnson.
Yeah, Olson Johnson.
Which I think, wasn't that also the name of a vaudeville team? Maybe I'm thinking of something else, but yeah, I remember. He was quite a prolific character actor.
Well, knowing Mel Brooks, he probably every line in that movie is from something else. He loves having inside jokes.
You must have a grandfather clock, Scott.
Yeah, I do. It's about 10 feet from me.
It adds a touch of class to the proceedings this evening, Scott.
And it's 4 minutes fast. Got to fix that.
All we need now is some Pat Boone heavy metal.
Good to go. No, we don't.
No, I could probably go the rest of my life and not.
Okay. Let me put it this way. All right, here.
No.
Either we raise the remaining $150, or I shut down everything and start playing Pat Boone songs.
Dear God.
If we don't
dig
raise
deep,
the money,
people,
Bob,
dig deep.
Bob's going to open every show.
I got to do
with
something.
Pat
I'll be right
Boone
back.
Metal.
You got another thing coming, right, Bob?
Bob.
Oh,
Bob,
we're no. We're going. No, we are. We're going straight to Panama.
Bob, I have not heard such blatant manipulation since Oral Roberts told his followers that the Lord would take him home.
Well, I start playing Panama by Pat Boone. You're gonna beg the Lord to take you home. I ain't kidding.
Your ears are gonna bleed, man.
Which sounds like a pretty good metal song when you get right to and your ears are gonna bleed.
I think it's been done.
Jay Cruzen tells me he was out bowling with the family this evening and rolled a 176. I'm impressed. I'm happy when I can move into three digits. Not much of a bowler I wasn't, no.
Me too, and that's with the bumpers up.
There you go.
Oh.
I've never seen a bumper.
Yeah, have the bumpers.
And I'm from Wisconsin.
Yeah, the bumpers are fun because you can play the carom.
There you go. Yeah, you can get impossible splits with the bumpers, right? So, did I hear y'all talking about music?
Yeah, Pat Boone metal, if you want to call that music.
Okay. I'm going to actually get to see Kansas. They're playing at a free concert in downtown L.A. this weekend on Saturday night. So, looking
nice.
Forward to seeing that. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen them. Two or three years ago, and they still got it. I mean, they got to wheel them out and prop them up, but they still got it, man.
Yeah. Well, actually, half of the band looks like Sparky, so there you go. They got to be good, right? There's a guy that's got, like, a patch on his eye, looks like a pirate, and, you know.
Yeah, old patch, they had to prop him up, and I think he had a nurse and oxygen and all that, but he still got it, man.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, no, it's... There's another act, too. Let's see here. Who the heck is it? Oh, it's Blitzen Trapper. I have no idea what that is. Never heard.
That's one of my favorite. I like, they have this really good song called Fur. It's really awesome.
It's called Fur?
Yeah, Blitzen Trapper Fur. Look it up on YouTube or whatever. I love that song.
It's called Firm? Fur.
F-U-R-R.
F-U-R-R. Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
Hey, just rock band. This is kind of like when there's a hostage situation and you receive a chopped off finger in the mail, just in case you think I'm kidding.
Oh no. We'll be right back.
that's how it goes. Millions of people living as foes.
Don't make me play more. Because I damned well do it. I will.
I don't have enough brown liquid in the cabinet to get through that.
Please donate. Okay. Speaking about music, just a public service announcement. There is there's a group of people that have gotten together, led by Tom Morello. I'm sorry, and it's called Rock Against the TPP, and they are doing free concerts across the Northwestern United States. I think they're trying to get branched out to do more concerts. And they're basically doing exactly that, rocking against the TPP, trying to get word out across it's nonpartisan, basically, to get word out against Trans-Pacific Partnership. And like I said, they're wanting to branch out to go, you know, more places besides the Pacific Northwest, upper Northern California, etc. And you can, I just happened to run across this over the weekend. I've been kind of tweeting out as I could, but I thought it was rather interesting, and it seems to be a rather worthy thing to be, you know, involved with. And they're getting corporate sponsors and whatnot who are against the TPP. Well, not necessarily corporate, but people like Credo Mobile and unions and mostly unions, Sierra Club, that type of thing.
The Teamsters give them a big ass truck.
Yeah. And so, you know, not really corporate, I guess you could say, but you know, they're getting sponsors to help them along, and I just thought I would mention it because I know some people who said that, oh yeah, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be in my city and whatnot, and I just thought it was rather interesting. I wanted to pass that information along, so kind of a little public service announcement. I thought that would be helpful for some folks, and if you would like to, you know, kind of get involved or, you know, want more information, you can always just look up Rock Against the TPP. I think I'm probably going to try to get a hold of some of their folks and see if I can get an interview with one of their organizers or something. And and speaking of which, on Monday, actually, I'm going to do a shameless plug, Bob. I'm sorry that I've got to. I'm going to have Portia Bolger on my show on Monday morning at 10:30. So on FYINation.com. So there we go. My mom's been talking. Sorry about that. Not to change. Well, I didn't change the subject, but I thought it was cool. You know, they're getting bands together and they're doing this rock against the TPP, and I thought that was pretty neat.
Cool. And a quick update. I just checked over at the Malloy website. He'll be classic tonight again. He was revved up and ready to go, but his voice tanked, so he will not be live this evening. And were it not for the fact that I have to go and pick up Ferg from work, we would do an epic extended Friday on the front porch. But being as how Ferg got off work 2 hours and 48 minutes ago, he's pretty antsy to get home by the time I get off the air. So my apologies for that. Yeah,
I bet he is.
Yeah, I mean,
can't he hitchhike back, Bob?
Yeah, why not? Right.
How's the work on the Durango proceeding?
It's by fits and starts and slowly, just trying to figure out what in the hell, you know, what in the hell's wrong. Let's see, because you know you go from the fix the simple crap first theory. So temperature sensor and thermostat done, didn't solve the problem. Pulled the water pump. Water pump was probably at the end of its useful life. But the problem is not entirely solved yet. So we're going to take the next step, whatever that may be.
Have you read the codes?
Oh yeah. I've read the codes and it's been on the diagnostic machine too. And it's not giving up its secrets.
Could there possibly be rust in the bottom tank of the radiator? Or?
Well, you know, when he did the thermostat, he completely flushed it.
Oh, okay.
And said it was, you know, everything looked clean going through there. At some point it may be a matter of, and I don't want to, I mean, you know, it's got that 318 V8 in it. So it's got, you know, it's an iron block engine. So it's not like the head's gotten warped or something. But if the head gasket's gone still, you got to pull the engine and dear God, that's going to be brutal. And he's got I gotta get this going for him. Just, you know, he's 20. He doesn't like being dropped off by dad.
Yeah, no doubt. I understand that.
And so, you know, like I said, by fits and starts. And
I've read his Facebook post, so I know kind of what's going on.
I just want to get it done. I'm not kidding. I've got a whole lineup here. We got 10 minutes to go and $150 to go. You can take your pick. Pat Boone, Enter Sandman. Pat Boone, you've got another thing coming. Pat Boone, Stairway to Heaven. Pat Boone, Panama. Pat Boone, Holy Diver. Pat Boone, No More Mr. Nice Guy.
No, no, and no.
This is all your fault, Spark. You did all
I know, but you're the one that turned me on. You made me Google it.
I think we need to hear some more Pat Boone, Bob. I think it's good for our soul.
I had to run outside a little while ago. I was trying to catch. It's that time of year again when they throw out the phone books again around the neighborhood.
Yeah, when they fling them at the house.
So I saw the guy going down the street, and I wanted to run out and flag him down and give him back the phone books. He just flings it.
I have the internet, buddy.
Nobody needs these damn things anymore.
Save a tree.
But they're still selling advertising to companies that think, oh, you got to be in the phone book.
I guess there's still enough Luddites out there, right?
You know, the last clip was 49 seconds long. That was like a knuckle on a little finger.
To learn how to love and forget how to hate.
Don't make me go to the shoulder.
Life's a bitter shame. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
Oh, dig that groovy flute, man.
Crazy train flute.
Does he sing Highway to Hell, Bob?
No, that violates his religion.
Oh.
Well, Holy Diver is Satan. little Ronnie Dio there.
Well, what Hillary was, actually.
How this all got started, he was Ozzy's neighbor, and Ozzy talked him into doing this, if you want some background on this.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Ozzy wanted the royalties. Sharon!
That's the background of this.
Did Ozzy play in the background?
No. Oh. Ozzy convinced him that he could do a heavy metal album. They were
long ago did this come out?
Oh, God, at least 10 years ago.
It's the 90s, isn't it? I mean, early aughts at best. I've also got Sebastian Cabot, actor, reads Bob Dylan, poet, and that may hurt even worse.
Oh, I like you.
Hey, Bob, if you Google, you can find Celine Dion doing You Shook Me All Night Long. You can really bring in some funds with that one.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, I'm warning you if we don't close the gap, the program Moran Monday is going to open with God only knows what kind of audio torment.
You better watch out. He's going to play Jack Webb speaking try a little tenderness before it's over.
Or just the original Richard Harris MacArthur Park.
Oh God.
Or maybe William Shatner doing Rocket Man.
There you go. Bob, you're kind of like Cleavon Little in Blazing Saddles holding a gun to his head. I'm going to shoot myself unless you guys, you know, do whatever.
He's serious. He'll do it.
He'll do it.
Well, it could be worse. I could do this. I could bring up this story about this mutant super life that are outbreaking in the United States just in time for back to school.
Hey, Scott, your clock's 5 minutes off.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I said that before. I haven't adjusted.
Very loud.
All right. Nobody's taking me seriously. We're gonna go. We're going for the elbow.
Oh no! Can't we do super life instead?
Wow, where did Pat dig up a guitarist? Panama.
Orchestra backing him up.
Well, I think that was Lawrence Welk. But you know,
don't insult Lawrence Welk.
Actually, his kids have offices in my building on the same floor.
Lawrence Welk's kids?
Welk, yeah. I think it's called Lawrence Welk Productions or something like that. Yeah,
I love that show. And
that show's down here on PBS. It's still
on. Lederhosen. Is there anything better than that? Playing the accordion? Come on, guys.
That's true.
Your Wisconsin is showing, Jenny.
Bobby and Sissy, you don't get any good accordion music. Oh, I got one for you. If you ever do that again, Bob, the Hillbilly Thunderstruck. You ever hear that one?
Oh yeah. Hayseed Dixie. Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, that's actually not that bad.
They got an accordion in that. That's pretty.
Yeah,
good.
And they bang an anvil, and yeah, it's not that bad.
You know, like
Yankovic plays the mean accordion, and so does Los Lobos.
People talk about
a whole bunch of the new Celtic punk bands have accordion and concertina and bagpipes and things.
Have you ever tried to play the accordion?
I took accordion for 12 years.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh my God! I
switched to piano.
I played piano. Like I'm really good with just one hand. I played French horn. I have an accordion. Her name is Camille, and it's just like I can play "You Are My Sunshine," and that's about it. With like two chords. Like people who actually can play accordion, like what is in their head? You have to be insane.
It was something to do.
The Celine Dion, "You Shook Me All Night Long," is more of a visual. You cannot unerase that from your mind. You can't. Celine playing the air guitar, it's just, you can't get.
Oh, no, there's air guitar too. Oh, we're so. Mike and Carol Brady are so watching this tonight before bed.
Celine is single again for all you bachelors out there.
Poor damn bachelors. Hey, thanks to Thomas and thanks to Jenny.
Yeah.
The hostage taking worked. We're down to $130 to go. Thank you very, very kindly. This is all just in fun, but it's pretty remarkable how much progress we've made this evening. I do have to go ahead and get out of here. The Horn Malloy Skype chat group will continue off air, however. Thanks, everybody, for all of your help this evening. Pat Boone notwithstanding. And, you know, my goal is to not play Pat Boone. Remember, that's the goal. But, no, thank you very kindly. Thanks for a rousing little Friday on the front porch. Thanks for a wonderful week. We'll continue to hope for the, I don't know, somebody will go and lay the healing hands of faith on Mike's larynx, or the healing hands of no faith. And things will, we hope, be better by Monday. He just needs rest. He drives himself too damn hard. And I understand that because, you know, if you don't have to be away from the mic, you don't like to be away from the mic. So get well soon, Mike, and y'all have a restful weekend. And everybody have a wonderful weekend. Maybe a concert report by next week from Billable Rick. And again, thanks to all of you who make this program happen in every way that you do, listening, commenting, everything. Thanks for your financial support that keeps independent broadcasting on the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night now.